feel a little bit like a lottery winner because I didn't do it. Wasn't really on purpose. It was just maybe a lot of good decisions along the way, but of course I didn't know it would end up like this. And it wasn't really, I've never really had, you know, the really, really long-term vision. Now I estimate that Curl runs in roughly 10 billion installations. That's a lot. That's like, we have like 2.5 installation per internet user on the globe.
That's Daniel Stenberg, maintainer of Curl. And this is the README Podcast, a podcast that takes a peek behind the curtain at some of the most impactful open source projects and the developers who make them happen. I'm B. Dougie, a.k.a. Brian Douglas.
And I'm Kathy Korvec.
Every episode, Kathy and I invite a maintainer or open source developer into our studio to explore their work, their story, and where the two meet.
In this episode, we speak with Daniel, who has been maintaining Curl for a quarter of a century, witnessing its astronomical growth and allowing it to evolve over time. Simply put, Curl is a command line tool for transferring data, and its name stands for client URL. It works on any platform, and because of that, it's used in billions of installations. Daniel works on it full time, and despite his many years of commitment to the project, he still finds great inspiration within it and doesn't really want to be doing anything else. In this conversation, we explore how Daniel first discovered open source, the way he came to maintain Curl, and how he balances it all. Daniel is a hero of mine, and here he shares the story of his first time coming into contact with code.
My first computer experiences was back in the mid-80s. I had a friend in my class at school who had a Commodore 64. Well, I got to know and visited many times. You're youngsters, you don't remember that, but we had computer magazines with, you know, a lot of lines with just data and numbers. Number, comma, number, comma, number, comma, number, comma, number, you know, pages up and page down. You had to enter them yourself. Back then, when you ran it, it would be a boring game or something. But I did that in my teens.
And did that lead to eventually studying programming in school?
That led to a very keen interest in computers. So I got myself a computer and then started programming like a maniac in my teens, continued then. So then, no, I never studied computers or engineering or anything. I got a job after I did my military service here in Sweden. And then I never, as I said, I didn't have to study. I just got a job and another job and another job and just went from that.
Were those always in computers and programming, or did you kind of bounce around?
No, well, my first, I got a job at IBM when I was 20. And then it wasn't programming, but it was computers. So they were Unix systems that needed to set up and configuration when they arrived here. And then so they got here, we configured them and they were shipped up to customers. So started out that and learned Unix and stuff like that. But after that, I got into a development job, and since then I've been a developer.
And what was the year when the you sort of transitioned to doing development?
That was 1993. Okay. A long time ago.
But still early web. I think once the web sort of got into a lot of our houses at that point.
Yeah, yes, it had started to show up.
And then from there, just tinkering around and playing with demos and things like that, how did you get involved with open source?
When I started working at IBM in 1991, when I started working to configure those machines and shipping them out to computers, I also soon realized that you could also get tapes with a lot of source code and tools that came with source code. There were a lot of GNU tools and stuff that I don't exactly remember how they got them, but you could actually get them on tape so that some customers actually got them. And at that time, it dawned on me that that's a lot of code out there that you could just, you know, get it and look at it, compile it, build it, and do whatever you want with it and learn from it. And that's one way I learned C programming at that time. So I understood and knew about the concept about a lot of free code. It wasn't called open source, of course, that early, but still a lot of code was there. So I wanted more of that code. And the more I learned about it, the more I also wanted to be part of that sort of the cool community to could just, you know, pump up code for everyone, for everyone's benefit.
I remember that myself, how there was a community around messing with computers. When I was younger, it was the older kids in the neighborhood that would be able to get all the DOS programs in Wolfenstein on the community center computer. They eventually showed us how to run them, and we also used to go around the community center computers to practice and play. So I have vivid flashbacks of just looking at those kids walking around with their floppy drives and teaching us how to run random games. I wondered if Daniel looked up to anyone else that wrote code.
I didn't know anyone. There was, you know, just heaps of code that you could get on those tapes, and they were a lot of tools. I didn't know anyone of those. I didn't know anyone who did open source or provided code like that. I just realized that there was an entire universe out there with that kind of people, and I thought that was cool, and I wanted to be like that. But I didn't know anyone. I didn't know any names or anything. So it was just a revelation to me that it could be like that. So I think it was much later than I actually learned the names of people that are actually, you know, famous people that were actually doing a lot of that code.
Nice. And then any of those inspire you to keep contributing and go further with open source?
Yes, they do. And I want to get inspired by people who do things for everyone, that keep on sort of bringing everything forward. And I try then to extract like good practices and see what people are doing that I think is good, and try to mimic that when I do open source, and some sort of learn from what I see in other projects that they do that's good, and try to carry that on. But I also think that we have so many bad examples as well in open source, that I see people who are leaders that are maybe do things in ways that I really disagree with, and I try to use that as a counterexample, that I know that's examples of behaviors or patterns that I don't want to reproduce in projects that I run. So therefore, I tend to not view people or individuals as sort of heroes, because everyone has ups and downs. And I'm sure I'm the same person here, because I'm sure I do things that some might appreciate and other things that isn't as appreciated. So I try to not idolize any persons for the entire person, but try to extract the good parts and ignore the parts I don't think is as good.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, I wonder if your introduction to open source too as well, it seemed like a natural introduction, because you didn't go to school doing programming, eventually found yourself in a programming role. But at the end of the day, like, all these folks are normal folks. Like, these are folks that happen to have these hobbies and build really cool things. And then those cool things eventually get adoption. So it's understandable too as well that a lot of these folks are just really doing cool things. And it's nice to focus on the output, the programs that they're writing too as well, which I wanted to get into as well. We brought you on to talk about Curl, which is a project you're maintaining today. Been maintaining for quite some time, at least actually, I don't even know if I could put a number on it too as well, but do you want to tell us sort of the...
More than 20 years.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. It's actually 23 years now since I released the first version of Curl. And then Curl was actually a rename of the earlier projects that I also worked with before, of course. So I think I'm approaching 25 years, counting from the early days.
Wow. 25 years on the same project. It was exciting to learn how exactly Curl became what it is today. Like so many projects, the foundations for it were out there, and Daniel just wanted to make it better.
When I learned about open source in general, and I learned about it, and I started to work on development in general, and I started working on different Unix systems and a lot of network related programming. And I was interested in that. I thought that was fun, and I did that in my everyday job then. And I got into, I learned about IRC in those early 1990s. And you could, you know, find people online and you could chat in chat rooms or channels, as they're called in IRC. And when doing that, I realized that you could program bots in IRC. So I started that with a friend, and we did an IRC bot open source, and we released it, and it worked, and we had that in a few chat channels. One day I realized that, hey, if you have a bot in an IRC channel, surely it should be able to, you know, offer some currency exchange service, like how much is 100 Swedish crowns in US dollars today? Perhaps we were talking about some products in the channel, you know, the price of whatever. So I realized, well, how do you do a currency exchange for a bot in an IRC channel? Yeah, I needed to download currency exchanges from somewhere. Well, they were available over HTTP, so I just needed a little tool to download stuff over HTTP. So I found one. It was called HTTP GET. It was a little bit over 100 lines of code. So I got that, and I started fiddling with that, and it was almost doing what I wanted. So I started to patch that, and I sent back my changes to the author. And that's how it started. So I continued to modify that until the author didn't want my changes anymore and told me to maintain it myself. So I took over that project. And after a while, I also found currency rates on other protocols. One Gopher server that offered currency rates and then another FTP server. So I had to add support for those protocols. And then it couldn't be called HTTP GET anymore. So I changed name to URL GET. And then after a while, I had users already then, a few. Then I don't remember exactly why, but I added support for FTP upload. And then the name URL GET was silly because it wasn't GET anymore. It was also the other way around. So I renamed it to curl in 1998. So then at that point, it could speak then HTTP, FTP, and Gopher, and FTP upload, and a few other tricks. So that's how it started. And then in 1998, that was just a few hundred, well, I think it was 2,000 lines of code, a few contributors, and yeah, a very simple little project. And I, of course, had no idea where I was going with that. It was just a little tool to download stuff and upload to FTP.
That's cool. So you go from this, I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit and we can go back and forth and in between, but you go from this small 2000 line project that you were just describing to curl. And curl today is so ubiquitous. It's like shipped on so many different operating systems. And I don't know how many developers use it. You probably know. How do you feel about the fact that curl is so ubiquitous today? And are you cautious about shipping updates to it?
Well, first, of course, it's a totally amazing feeling to just have that accomplishment or having done that. But at the same time, I feel a little bit like a lottery winner because I didn't do it. It wasn't really sort of on purpose. It was just maybe a lot of good decisions along the way, but of course I didn't know it would end up like this. And it wasn't really, I've never really had, you know, the really, really long-term vision. This is where I want to go in the future because I didn't know. I still don't know. I'm just, you know, playing by ear and taking decisions day by day. But of course, it's awesome. And yes, it makes me cautious. Now I estimate that curl runs in roughly 10 billion installations. That's a lot.
So yeah.
That's like, we have like 2.5 installation per internet user on the globe. And yeah, sure, that's a responsibility and that makes me cautious and makes me think about, but not so much for doing upgrades or releases, because I think that is fairly well. I mean, I'm doing my 200th release next week. So I've done releases a few times now. So I think that is cool. I think more of responsibility in how to, for example, speak the protocols, how to behave as a client, or, you know, how to be a good citizen on the network and stuff like that, so that I don't push badness in general into clients. And also, since I've then reached this position, I know a lot of people then look at how do curl do things, like how do curl implement whatever in the protocol stuff. So people are going to look at my implementation and you know, copy that and say, well, they did it, so we can do it too. So I think that's something I'm cautious about. So I want to make sure that we do it at least reasonably well, so that we don't encourage badness just by people copying and mimicking our ways of doing it. When they do that, and I think that's fine when they do it, but then I want it to be the good way to do it.
The responsibility of maintaining a massive project like curl is significant. I can understand why Daniel may feel like he wants to do well by his users. As the ecosystem grows, the use cases evolve as well. Daniel finds a lot of folks dependent on curl as part of their libraries. And with so many people using curl, he believes that a part of his work is to offer support, since common issues pop up all the time.
When people use libcurl, that's just an internet transfer engine, really. So someone else will do something that uses libcurl. And yeah, for example, one of the earlier users that is still a very big user is PHP. So when you use PHP and you do file transfers, you very often use curl to do that. So that's an example where it very quickly becomes a problem for us when someone uses PHP and runs into problems with file transfers. So yeah, that's very common. And since a so big portion of our users, or I would say that, I mean, when I say 10 billion installations of curl, that's, you know, 9.8 billion installations of libcurl. So the command line is such a small part of that. So libcurl is that majority thing, and that is used by people who then depend on curl for their file or data transfer stuff. And that can be anything from, you know, a hobbyist up to the really, really big companies doing millions and millions of transfers per second.
You mentioned a couple times I picked up that you used the word us and we. I'm curious, how big is the team? Like, who's contributing to this? How are you sort of managing that?
I always try to make sure that it's not me. It's not I. There's no I in team. But no, but it's actually not my project. It's not. I'm not Mr. Curl. Well, I can be Mr. Curl because I do more than half of all the commits. But it certainly is a very large amount of people that actually are helping out and have helped out over the years and all the time. So it's really a we. Even if I'm maybe the captain and I have the final say on a lot of things, I'm also, well, pretty much maybe the architect of a lot of stuff, but there's a lot of people helping out. So the team, depending on how you define a team. So I think we're about usually around 12, maybe 14 people per year who makes more than 10 commits to the project. So it's not a big team in that regard. But then we have a very long tail of people who are just, you know, one-time committers or just, you know, drive-by pull request once and then we never see them again. So we have around, I think, maybe 100 first-time committers per year or so. So there's a lot of that. And of course, I want to make sure that they're not just a one-time committer. I want to make sure that they're at least two times, but, you know, get them to stick around and help out with more stuff. Because if they've been over the threshold to land one change, it's easy for them to make another one too. But at the same time, everyone is welcome to help out. I don't mind if they do it just once either. As long as it helps the project, it's a good thing. And I try to make it really, as a policy, to make sure to give credit where someone else has helped out. I make sure that they get the credit for their changes. And I thank everyone who has helped out so that that's what I can pay people with, right? So they get proper credit for helping when they do.
Given the number of people that contribute to Curl at various times, I wondered if there are times that Daniel is surprised by the content of the contributions.
I would say both yes and no. I think in general, people are actually pretty conservative with what they actually offer. So it's very rarely that they actually offer something totally crazy, you know, that goes completely against everything that Curl is or has ever done. So it's not that people suddenly introduce a window system on top of everything or a game. It just doesn't happen. But I would say that I'm sometimes surprised by the effort that apparently people have done, you know, under the wraps, and suddenly they unveil one day that, wow, I want to do this, and they unload 4,000 lines of code in one single patch and says, here, have a play with this. And that surprises me, and I try to discourage people from doing that, of course, because it's a horrible experience to receive that and work with that. And but I also often find myself in the other end that I'm surprised by some people. And this happens actually fairly often, that people bring something they want to have in Curl that is a fair feature or a change, and they want to push it, and they go, you know, 80%, and then they vanish. And it sits there lingering. Yeah, that's an 80% implemented thing. What do I do with this? And if it's really good, I could work on it myself, and if I really wanted to and I have the energy. But if I don't, it'll just, you know, bit rot in a while. It'll no longer merge clean, and there's no tests there, and there's documentation missing, and eventually we just close it and it'll just die. And that happens, I think, surprisingly often. And it always surprises me because someone has gone through a lot of effort to bring it to that point. So what makes them stop at that point and not, you know, hit all the way? So, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any ways that you tell, like, is it like a lot of people asked for this, or is it something like you wanted it yourself?
Yeah. If it's one of those two, it's really easy, right? If there's a lot of people asking for it, then you know that there's clearly a demand and an interest. And if there's something I want, then I have an interest to push for it. But I, of course, try to not want things just for my own silly purposes. But those are fairly easy cases. It's much harder when someone, you know, brings in something that is a protocol feature you read about 3 years ago. And now they say, well, we want to do this. And it's fairly big and clunky, but they've documented it and there are test cases. And yeah, is this good? Should we have this or shouldn't we? Yeah, there's no easy way to say yes or no to that. You just have to go with, well, yeah, ask some others, see what the interest is among the community, and then just, you know, guess, get a feeling.
Yeah, just go maybe, from there.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe it's good. Sure. And I think, I mean, we also in Libcur, we try to never change behavior and not break existing behavior. So once we have adopted it into the code, we basically will never yank it out. So it's a pretty big investment too. So if we take it on, we take it on forever, basically. That's also why I want to make sure that the pull requests and the changes are complete before I adopt it. Because it's also a sort of a life lesson that the second I adopt it and say, sure, we merge it, the contributors vanish. In you know, 9 times out of 10, we never see them again. So it's really, really, you know, now it's your ball. You have it. So it's on your part of the track now. It is so obvious so many times.
You don't want to feel stuck with it. Yeah.
Exactly. So, well, when I get it, I want it to be good enough so that I can be stuck with it. I don't want to have, you know, have something half broken, half decent thing that I have to fix and clean up for a very long time going forward once I take responsibility for it.
I was just going to make a very bad joke about it. I used to be, my role at GitHub is to create tech debt. So I tend to institute a lot of new programs and projects and then hand them off to other teams. So it's the best part about my job.
Maybe I shouldn't have asked you for all that help with the documentation and open source project.
Yes. Well, I'm happy to get it started. I'm just also happy to hand it off to as well.
There's a lot of responsibility that comes with maintaining a project of Curl size, but also a need to keep building and growing. Since the team is relatively small, Daniel has built a system to do this while being transparent with all the users who depend on it every day.
We have that discussion often in that discussion around, should we merge this or not? Is it good enough? Is this a feature we want? Is it done in the way we want it? And recently, during the, I think, the last 2 years or so, I've actually introduced a new way to do it, play it a little safer by naming or labeling things as experimental. And then with that, I then sort of reserve the right to change behavior and yank it out again if we don't want to. So that way we can actually land stuff, just brand it experimental so that nobody will actually rely on it really hard without the warning signs. So that allows us to bring in a few things. And if we really don't like it, we can take it out again or remodel it if we come up with a better way to do it or stuff like that.
And you're talking about like when you actually ship something, it's labeled as experimental. So then when people are using Curl.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, okay. But also, since I mean, in Curl, we only really ship source code. We don't actually ship the binaries from the project. So we just ship them marked as experimental in the source code. So that means that someone will actually have to enable it by, you know, opting into enabling that particular feature. For example, right now, HTTP 3 support in Curl is marked experimental. So if you want HTTP 3 support when you build Curl, you actually have to enable it. And then you know that is, yes, you enable it on your own. You're on your own when you do that. Don't do that in production, please. Yeah, or totally. If you do it, you at least know that we told you about it.
Okay, so every PR that I ship of Brian's, I will mark as experimental. Noted.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
Warning.
Yeah. And then is there like a certain amount of time that passes? Do you accept, like, you ship it as experimental? When does it become officially part of the project?
Yeah, the idea I've had is that by having them experimental, we will have people that are actually trying them out and, you know, reporting bugs, and we will polish the worst side effects of them and so on. And then when we feel that they're mature and people are actually, they have some sort of demand for this feature, we unmark the experimental and we ship them and maybe switch so that they become opt-out instead of opt-in or whatever. And then everything is fine and dandy. It doesn't really work that good in practice, because the harsh reality is that experimental features are rarely ever enabled by users. So they're actually not used as much. So it doesn't actually work as good as I want them to. But that's more of a work in progress.
While Curl was Daniel's main focus, he did work at Mozilla and left that job in 2018. There's always a push and pull between getting a job and doing open source full time. I wanted to know more about that position at Mozilla and ultimately what made Daniel decide to pivot.
When I worked at Mozilla, I worked in the Necco team, as there is called. That's the networking team. So it handles everything that is HTTP, DNS, cookies, and sockets and stuff like that, but within Firefox. So that was what I was working with. And I had permission to work a little bit curl on work hours too, but curl was never a focus for Mozilla at all. So yes, I had permission to work on it, but they didn't really care about curl.
So was that...
It was a really good sort of CV thing to have when I got the job, of course, because so sure, I've done this. Can I get a job with you?
Yeah, I guess my next question would have been, so how did you balance these sort of contributions to curl, knowing that if you're less than 12 people who are doing more than 10 commits throughout the year, were you able to maintain the contributions and the project during that time?
Yeah, well, I worked with curl as a spare time project for 19 years, right? Or 20 years before I started doing it full time. So I have a long time and practice of doing curl in my spare time. And yeah, I've spent a lot of spare time hours doing curl. Of course, it's been a challenge. It's been up and downs, and depending on my life and what I've done for real work day to day. But sure, it's been good. It's been up and down. And I think sometimes that has also, of course, been like a break. And if I'm slow at accepting changes or slow at feedback, it of course slows everything down. In general, I think we've had a good run, and I don't think my lack of attention or my limited work hours have been an obstacle or a break here. So it's, of course, it's a challenge to run a project like that on your spare time.
Yeah.
When did it kind of, since you've been running it, you ran it for so long by yourself, when did the project kind of take on a life of its own?
Yeah, never. I mean, since I still do, like, I think according to the stats, I've done 57% of the commits after 23 years. And that's out of 26,000 commits. So I still do a lot of it. So I'm not sure if it actually has gotten a life of its own. But sometimes I was like, maybe that's because I haven't let it, because I still think it's that fun. I want to do this myself. So it's not that, you know, it's not that I'm in a desperate need for someone else to do a lot more, because as long as this works and I'm having fun, so it, I don't mind. It's good stuff.
By doing close to 60% of the commits, Daniel's role as the captain of the ship is certainly solid. Given how long he's been working on curl and all that it demands of him, does he ever imagine retiring as captain?
I think at some point I can say I won't be the captain anymore. I fully believe that, but I don't see it happening anytime soon, just because I think this is fun and this is what I want to do. So I don't think, as long as I want to do it like this, I don't see myself as sort of stepping down from this position. But I think if I wanted to step down now, I think it would work fine. I think someone else or someone, a team would step up and do what's necessary to continue with stuff. But being done, I think a project like this is never done, because the internet and how we do internet transfers is evolving and changing all the time. So we need to just keep changing curl just to keep up with the internet and how it evolves. So I'm sure that as long as everything keeps changing as they are, we are going to keep changing curl too. I think anyone who's doing anything like this, of course, there are moments, maybe not when I question if curl is the right, but maybe at sometimes, you know, if I sometimes get a problem or struggle with something, I could just, you know, throw my hands in the air and say, maybe this is this crap. I can never fix this problem. And, you know, get in doubt with it. I can't do this. And then 2 minutes later, I figured it out and everything is good again. I think maybe me and curl, we're more friends, better friends now than ever, so that we've sort of gotten to know each other. So I know how to work with it and how to sort of keep my interest at a good level pretty much all the time. A lot of the code has been with me for so long time, and I've written a lot of it. So I know it's really how, you know, I can just scroll through any random part of the code and recognize it, and I can have a feeling for it. I don't remember everything, but I can sort of get a sense for what it is and how. Many times I also have sort of memories from when I wrote the code, so I can sort of remember use cases for why stuff is like that. So yeah, I certainly feel it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious about that change too as well, and that the pace of keeping change. So I day-to-day, I write a lot of JavaScript, and it's not a secret that JavaScript ecosystem, it kind of turns over every couple of years, where new things become, you know, the shiny new thing, everybody runs to that. But it's something to say, like, 23, 24 years of curl existing, being dependent on projects like libcurl, or libcurl being dependent on curl, that there's something to say about that consistency. So I'm curious, though, of the alternatives to curl. Do you see any of those gaining enough adoption that I don't think libcurl is going to say, hey, we're going to try this new thing or HTTP. But do you see like future frameworks, future protocols say, hey, we're going to try this new thing?
Yeah, I'm a really hard to that. I've never been good at foreseeing what's going to happen in the future. I was never good at that. I've never even tried it. So it just happens like this. And I'm taking decisions day by day. But sure, anything can happen tomorrow. I think what actually makes libcurl better and better over the time is exactly consistency, because it's proven that we can be consistent with our behavior and how to do things, and we can do it for 20 years. Libcurl didn't exist the first 2 years, right? So it's actually libcurl is 2 years younger. But we've supported the same API for forever. And when it comes to an internet of billions and billions of devices and machines and servers and everything, consistency is very, very appreciated and valued. So it's really hard for someone else. It's hard for other ecosystems to come up with a good replacement in short term, because consistency is key and golden. And you don't get consistency by something that you introduce now or tomorrow. And of course, we get a lot of competitors and alternatives to curl and libcurl that shows up and goes away again in 2 years. And I mean, that's been like that all the time, right? But it's hard for me to say when they become a real contender. When will they replace curl and libcurl? At some point, something will do, I'm sure. But I don't know when or how it's going to look like.
Ultimately, one of the things that has kept curl so successful for so long is reliability. We trust the tools and the people behind them.
You can upgrade curl to the latest, and you know that your old scripts, your old programs, they will remain working the same thing, because we don't break things. We don't break behavior. We don't break APIs. We don't. If we promised a behavior before, we will maintain that at a very high cost. But I mean, so I think that's consistency and that's trust that our users expect, and they know that we can deliver, and that so that I think that's the reason why curl and libcurl are in the positions they are.
Oh, one thing we didn't really touch on, just to kind of jump back to the Mozilla conversation. Why did you leave Mozilla?
Well, two things, really. First, I felt a little bit stuck as a developer, not because it's not a fun thing, because it's network stuff, and I'm interested in that and HTTP and everything that I sort of enjoyed with curl for so long. But it's Firefox is a big thing, you know, millions and millions of lines of code and a very complicated hundreds of threads and objects and C++, and it's actually a very, very heavy ship to bring forward and to do changes in, and it's a complicated thing with a lot of bugs and a lot of incoming bugs all the time. It's actually, I think, over time a pretty stressful and situation where, you know, it's really hard to do things. Bug fixes or bug reports arrive faster than you're able to fix them. And also we had a really hard time for a while there when our development team was decreased significantly. So I jumped ship. And I quit Mozilla before I knew what I wanted to do or how I was going to do it. So I better get rid of this and figure out what I want to do instead.
Curl has held Daniel's interest for a quarter of a century. While he was at Mozilla, he found himself somewhat uninspired, but curl continues to be the thing he wants to work on, to improve, and to engage with. That's why he ultimately left Mozilla.
I could have done something else within Mozilla, so I'm sure I could have found something else to do within Firefox. But first, I feel that my area of interest is not that. I wouldn't want to go, you know, totally, completely out in a different side of everything, because I'm not really interested in that kind of development and that kind of maybe those languages or problems in those areas. I wouldn't be interested in them. So I'm still interested in networking. I'm still interested in that kind of work. So I wasn't really prepared to go completely wild. So that's one reason why I didn't really see a future in. And also sort of my problems with my manager also made me sort of decide that pretty quickly. So what was that? So otherwise, yeah, sure. boredom is one word I use, exactly. But then I've been working with curl for 20 years, so why I'm not bored with that? But and I really can't explain that as good. But when it comes to curl, it's actually more of a product, exactly how I wanted it to be, right? And I've been able to work on it for this long, and I've actually, you know, refactored it many times, and now it's like all the internals are very different than they were from the beginning. So I'm actually pretty happy with it. So I'm not actually bored with it. I'm actually more happy with it, and I'm keen on making sure that it actually gets even better and sort of more advanced and more polished going forward. So I'm not bored with it.
It is wonderful to be able to dedicate yourself to a project you created. Daniel maintained a project with a handful of contributors year after year. What are the things he wishes projects would do? What norm would he wish other projects to adopt?
Well, I want to be the project that has a really low bar for newcomers and contributors to start doing things. And of course, that is, to do that, everything has to be laid out so that you can figure it out yourself when you're in your, you know, you do your fork of the project, you do your pull request, and you want to submit it. So I want to make sure that everything is there, documented, no weird processes or things, obstacles in the way for doing that. I know a lot of projects that, you know, knee-jerk reaction to, you know, getting those spell check pull requests that just changes one word in a comment and say that's a bad thing. But I actually think that's getting those pull requests is actually a good sign that it's easy to do that, or easy enough to do that, at least. And I think that's the kind of project I want to be. And I think a lot more projects should strive to lower the bar for contributions. Because I think, as I said before, getting the first contribution from someone, that's the first step, right? And then you can get the next one. Maybe the next one isn't just the silliest spell request, a spell check. Maybe the other one is actually fixing the documentation and the fixing a test case, or actually improving things, or fixing real bugs. So I think lowering the bar for contributions is one of the primary things an open source project should do.
Yeah, I'm curious, what's your thought on the current generation of younger programmers too, as well? Because like curl's written in C. A lot of the projects I've actually got involved in, they're really written in JavaScript. So like I'm already quite a few steps removed from C. What's your thoughts on the future generations of how we write code and these programmers?
First, of course, I think that less and less programs are written in C, and I think that's actually how things are supposed to be. So I think C as a language is, of course, a diminishing part of everything. But at the same time, I think we're at an interesting era or period of time, and we've been for a while actually, when the amount of software is growing so fast, so that the amount of software in the world is growing probably faster than the amount of engineers that are supposed to take care of all the code. So even if I say that there is less C programming needed, it's still a very vast amount of C programs that still needs programmers. But there's also a very vast amount of, you know, JavaScript and Rust and Go and all the others. So there's just a lot of everything. So I think there's going to be a need for developers and engineers in all of these areas, even if some of them are going to grow more than others, but there's still a lot of everything.
Yeah, yeah. And I even missed a correlation too as well, because you mentioned libcurl was heavily leveraged by the PHP community. And with curl getting started around 1998, around that time, I believe, is that the year that you threw out earlier? Yeah. Web 2.0, like that's really when I really got involved into programming and getting involved in stuff. And that was PHP, that was Perl, and all the sites that I use, like MySpace and now Facebook and a couple other sites, all leverage the next generation of languages as well. So basically, I'm just, in my mind, I'm coming to the correlation and also the epiphany of even now with our Gen Z coders, they're taking on the next level thing. So perhaps the no code movement maybe become a thing, continue to become a thing. I'm here for it for sure.
Yeah, so exactly. So there's always another layer on top of all the old stuff. So, but the old stuff doesn't really just go away because of that, because someone still needs to maintain that and make sure that it works or gets replaced in a sensible way.
Yeah, and I applaud you and thank you very much for having the interest in continuing down the path of keeping curl moving forward and supporting so much stuff that I do. So every now and then I love just running a quick curl command to the GitHub API, getting the data I need, or not even the data needed, it's want to review some repos, datas, labels, issues. Out of the box, it's always my first place I test my APIs is this quickly run a curl command, which that's my only use case, but I know there's so many other use cases for curl for sure. So thanks.
Right. But it also has become a little bit of that, you know, a lot of people document their APIs by showing the curl command line how to use it, right? So that's another thing that has been sort of in curl's favor, the entire growth of REST APIs and stuff like that, and the use of curl to drive those APIs.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point also. I missed it as well because, all through the GitHub API, every single one of the reference docs endpoints all have a curl command, and then it has the Octokit command next to it. And so, you know, choose whichever way you want to do it. But the beauty of curl is that it's not specific to my environment or my operating system. I can run that curl command other places.
Daniel is a legend in open source, and his work has changed the face of the architecture of the internet. What advice does he have?
Well, I think it's hard because it's of course hard for someone to tell someone, yeah, you should just stick with it for a long time and then you will succeed. But I'd rather look at it from the other side and say that I think one of the reasons why you can succeed with something like curl is by sticking with it and, you know, enduring and being just keep at it, because that's a way to succeed eventually, because not a lot of things, you know, is an immediate success. Curl certainly wasn't. I mean, it took years before it even got a fair amount of users. And that, I mean, it doesn't mean that everyone has to spend years to actually find success, but it certainly isn't. I think getting things quick is not, I mean, succeeding with something sometimes means that you have to stick with it for a while and work on it and really believe in it and just be there and make sure that it actually ends up being that thing you want it to be. And of course, saying that to someone who thinks, I get that question a lot by people who say that, well, how can you stick with one project for so long? Because a lot of people say that, well, they have to change project every few months because they get bored otherwise. Sure, and that's a fair thing. But if you switch project all the time, maybe no project will ever be good enough to actually hit to any level or succeed at any particular, I mean, reach something. So I think to really get somewhere, you need to spend time and effort. And how much, it'll of course depend. If you're a genius, you can do it in really short time. But most of us aren't geniuses. We're just, you know, do things.
It was great to speak with Daniel Stenberg and have him on the Readme podcast. To learn more about Daniel and curl, please visit curl.se. I'm Brian Douglas, and I'm a developer advocate here at GitHub.
And I'm Kathy Korovec. I work in product. The Readme podcast is a GitHub podcast that dives into the challenges our guests faced and how they overcame those hurdles. In sharing these stories, we hope to provide a spotlight on what you don't always see in the lines of code and what it took to build the technology that inspires us all.
It's been really great spending time with you. The Readme podcast is part of the Readme project at GitHub, a space that amplifies the voices of the developer community, the maintainers, leaders, and the teams whose contributions move the world forward every day. Visit github.com/readme to learn more. Our theme music has been produced on GitHub by Dan Gorelick with Tidal Cycles. Additional music from Ray Royale and Blue Dot Sessions. The Readme podcast is produced by Sound Made Public for GitHub. Please subscribe, share, and follow GitHub on Twitter for updates on the podcast and all things GitHub. Thanks for listening.